Welcome to the Teach the Geek podcast, where engineer and author Neil Thompson talks with STEM professionals about public speaking, a struggle for many of us. Whether you're a novice public speaker or a proficient one, you can always pick up tips on how to improve. Here's your host, Neil Thompson.
Welcome to another edition of Teach the Geek Interviews. My name is Neil Thompson. I'm the founder of Teach the Geek. I work with technical professionals so they can present more effectively, especially in front of non-technical audiences. You can learn more about that at teachthegeek.com. Again, that's teachthegeek.com. Today, my guest is David Duffett, and he's on a mission for nerds and geeks to become powerful speakers. He's the man behind Let the Geek Speak, working with technical types to make their presentations the best they can be. So how did an electrical engineer get into this type of work? Well, let's figure it out. Welcome to Teach the Geek Interviews, David.
Thanks very much for having me along, Neil. I'm pleased to be here.
So I mentioned that you were electrical engineering. You studied electronics and electrical engineering in school. What motivated you to do that?
So I was kind of always interested in electronics, and it seemed like a sad thing to me, but some of my friends seemed to be kind of going into jobs that they weren't particularly interested in, but they kind of sensed that it was the right thing to do and that there was going to be a good career ahead of them, even though it wasn't their favourite thing. And I was just always interested in particularly communications electronics. So thinking of radios and telephone systems and stuff like that. And so I decided to pursue, an education that was in that direction. And so I did what was called at the time an HNC in electronics and electrical engineering, which had radio as part of it. And then I went on to do a degree later.
Nice. So what type of work did you do once, or at least before you started Let the Geek, or before you started Let the Geek Speak, and after you got your degree, what type of work did you do?
Yeah, so originally I was working in a college doing some audiovisual stuff. So I was a technician really in the college, but the opportunity came along to do a little bit of teaching in the college as well. And I took to that opportunity and found out that I liked doing it. And then I went into one non-teaching job. I went and worked at an energy park in Milton Keynes, which was a new city where all of the houses were more energy efficient than the normal housing stock. And we monitored them using remote sensing equipment to tell the humidity and temperature in various rooms versus the outside temperature and things like that. And then I actually bumped into the vice principal of a college that I'd previously been working in, and he now worked for the Civil Aviation Authority. That's the same as your Federal Aviation Authority over there. And he'd got some openings in the College of Telecoms Engineering. And originally he got me down for some kind of technician role until he heard that I'd been doing some teaching at the college. And then he kindly opened up the opportunity for me to interview as an instructor. And I ended up getting the job and teaching people at airports and air traffic control centers how to repair communications equipment.
Interesting. So you did mention that you ran into somebody and it kind of morphed into this different role. Typically, when I think about electrical engineers, I think of some pretty technical people in the work that they do, as opposed to those who actually do the teaching. Is that something that you knew you were going to gravitate towards, or is it just kind of something that fell into your lap?
Well, I this guy that had gone on from being the vice principal of the college in a town called Aylesbury, and he was now the head of the CAA, or actually National Air Traffic Services College of Telecoms Engineering. We got talking, and he'd got a couple of openings, and I went along and, went through the standard interview process. It all worked out. But one of the things that I found, Neil, is that I was bumping into so many people who were a lot more technical than I was. I was technical enough to learn the systems and do the teaching, but I always felt that I wasn't quite as technical as some of the other people. And it was only kind of a little bit later in life, when I got a bit more comfortable in my skin, that I realized the reason that my pendulum didn't swing all the way up to the very technical is because actually I was kind of a bit more of a people person, a bit more of a trainer type of person. And so, I came to understand things a little bit later on, but I certainly understood things, successfully taught people how to repair the communication systems at airports and air traffic control centers.
You know, you're kind of an anomaly then, Dave, because oftentimes when people think about engineers, they think about those people that are in front of their computers, the people that aren't all that interested in talking to people, really. But here you are, a person with an electrical engineering degree with that, but that's your job, talking in front of people. So kudos to you for breaking those stereotypes.
Oh, thank you very much. But across my career, Neil, I have worked with a lot of those people that don't want to talk to other people, especially in the telecoms world, software and hardware engineers that would much rather be in a darkened corner of the office coding or designing electronic circuit than they would be face to face with other people.
Yeah, 100%. So what was the motivation for you to start Let the Geek Speak?
Well, so from the Civil Aviation Authority, I moved into the more commercial world, and I found myself with opportunities to speak at various events. And especially when I worked for a company called Aculab, which did computer telephony cards back in the day. They're more of a cloud services organization now. But I had an opportunity to go around the world and speak at various conferences. And what I saw was that these engineering types that were kind of forced out onto the stage to talk to people about their specific technical specialisms weren't ever so good at it. And there was probably room for improvement. And from that commercial organization called Aculab, I went on to work for a company called Digium and to be the worldwide community director for an open source project called Asterisk, which was a software that could turn a regular server into a sort of a communications platform. And again, I spoke at a number of conferences and ended up kind of involved in the organization of one particular conference in the US every year. And I just saw that, you know, engineers looked like they needed help if they did want to get out there. And of course, you wouldn't want to force anybody to get out there that doesn't want to speak in public. But the ones that chose to still looked like they needed some help in getting the message out a little bit. And so that was the basis for Let the Geek Speak.
So what, from what you've seen in the engineers that have given presentations, what do you think their biggest issues are?
Well, one of the massive ones is being too technical with their audiences, not checking in to find out their audience's current level of technical understanding, maybe giving more detail than is actually required for the, what they're trying to get over. And so I have a little phrase, Neil, and because of course we hear a lot about people knowing their stuff. I don't know whether that's a phrase over there in the US, but over here you'd hear, yeah, Mark really knows his stuff, or Mary really knows her stuff. And my little phrase is that knowing your stuff is not enough. It's the ability to communicate the relevant part of your stuff at the right technical level that will actually see you through. And if you can do that with confidence and clarity and connection with your audience, then so much the better.
I really like that quote. Knowing your stuff is not enough. And yeah, I certainly would know if someone were to say over here that, you know, person X knows his or her stuff. Yeah, I would know what they're talking about, but I think you're absolutely right. When it comes to giving presentations, you may have all this technical expertise, but if you're putting it in such a way that a non-technical audience can understand, well, it's like, it's almost as if you're speaking another language. You got a bunch of English speakers and you're speaking French to them. It's like, let me get on my French English dictionary or something. I don't know what to do.
yeah, you're bang on the money. And the situation is often that the less technical people are in the audience are perhaps the more influential. So it could be a hiring manager in an interview situation, could be the CFO in a sales situation. And so really, as a technical person, you're not doing yourself any favors when you're too technical for people.
Oh, 100%, David. The decision makers very often are technical. The CEO probably got promoted from sales and they weren't technical when they were in sales, but now they're the top person. And you're a technical person trying to talk to the CEO, you better put things in a way that person can understand. Because if you're asking them for something or asking her for something and they don't understand, the answer is going to be no.
Exactly. Yeah, you're quite right. And of course, even if those people did come from a technical background, the chances are that they've been in management or whatever position they're in for a few years and the technology's changed. And so they, you know, they no longer have that deep understanding that would equip them to deal with a highly technical talk.
So when you are talking about technical people, how open are they to getting feedback on their presentation skills or public speaking generally?
Well, that's an interesting question, Neil. I mean, the first step, of course, is desire to want to be better. And the next step is, you know, to open up to have a level of self-awareness. And what I find is that either people are very nervous and self-critical, or maybe they're right at the other end of the spectrum where they think that they know everything and they don't need any help at all. Of course, in that middle ground, if people are in that middle ground, then they're ripe to help. But, you know, some people are and some people aren't. But what I've tried to do is in my system, the Let the Geek Speak framework is seven powerful. Well, I used to call them seven power presenting protocols. And I still have seven power presenting protocols. But what I've come to understand is that they're really seven powerful principles for communication that can be applied just as easily to meetings or giving one-to-one feedback as they can to presentations. But what I've tried to do is create those in a way that it's easy for engineers to receive and digest and therefore implement. So I'm not kind of trying to push a whole load of soft skills, you know, in some kind of wishy-washy way that the engineers would kind of rebel against. What I'm trying to do is work with them. And just like there's a syntax for a programming language or maybe some rules for the electronic circuit they're building, I'm going to give them a framework for creating or assessing presentations.
Excellent. So what are the seven principles?
Let's go through them right now. They all begin with a P. The first one is the purpose. You've got to think about the purpose of your presentation. And I'm sure you can relate to this, Neil, but most technical people, when they're given the opportunity to do a presentation, the first thing they think about is doing the slides and shuffling a deck of slides and taking this one out or borrowing some slides from Martin round the corner and then adding a couple in or moving a few around. And of course, that's the very last thing that people should be thinking about with a presentation. And so it's thinking about that purpose, taking a step back and thinking about what is to be achieved. And of course, that includes knowing your audience. And if possible, you really want to be circulating the purpose that you come up with to the audience ahead of the presentation so that they can approve it or tell you whether it needs optimizing, so that when you get together with the audience, what you're going to deliver and what they need to receive are kind of properly overlapped rather than more like this. So that's the purpose protocol. Each protocol actually has like at least an hour's worth of training around it. So I'm, of course, summarizing. But that's the purpose. The next one is the plan. And as engineers, we like to have things in good order. And the good order for a presentation is understanding the way people's attention spans work and knowing how to take advantage of those in a presentation. Also understanding the keys to filing things away in people's memories. And so we're going to plan our presentation so that it takes maximum advantage of that peak that you get at the beginning when everybody's excited. Then as people's attention span naturally drops down a little bit, we need to have tools and techniques to kind of keep it pepped up. And then at the end, the last part of your presentation, again, the attention span naturally comes up. And so we need to take advantage by getting our great information into those prime time areas.
Okay, so that's one. So one is purpose, two is plan. What are the other five?
That's right. The next one is preferences. We all have different preferences. And if we were talking about running a meeting, I'd be thinking of personality profiles and which people are kind of dominant and which people are more cautious. But in presentation skills, we tend to think about people's learning styles and how they learn. And just to give you two very sharply contrasted examples. Some people, in fact, the majority of engineers, like to learn by doing. So if they got a new piece of equipment, they're going to play with it first. And if they can't get it to do what they want, maybe they're going to read the manual if they really have to. On the other hand, there could be a bunch of people, and this is a sweeping generalization, but I hope you'll permit me this. If you were talking to a bunch of HR professionals, they're probably more likely to want to take some input, maybe reflect on things before they go into taking some training. So they learn in a different way. And so the point of preferences is to not only understand your own preference, but then make sure that you don't fall into the trap of delivering something according to your own learning style when your audience might have a different learning style. So it's really been intentional about matching in with the learning styles of your audience. And of course, if you don't know what that preferences for your audience, and maybe there's different people, maybe there's some engineers, some HR people, and some financial people in, and then you've got to cater for all of those. So that's preferences. The next one is practice. And I'm sure, Neil, in your helping other people to present, you probably have a bit of a focus on practice, because people need to practice. And of course, what that doesn't mean is flicking through your slides on your laptop and thinking about what you might say when that particular slide comes up. Practice is all about doing it out loud in real life, preferably to real people in your audience. But if you can't, you can always record yourself on your phone or record yourself on a video camera or a laptop or whatever. And given that we know the beginning and the ending of a presentation are the most important parts from an attention span point of view, then why wouldn't we practice those even more than the middle part? Obviously, we want to practice the whole lot so we know how long it lasts, so we know if there's any words or phrases that sound pretty good in our heads, but we stumble over them when we come to say them in real life. So there's a lot of advantages to practicing out loud, but those are just a few. Then the next P, so we're on the fifth one now, is participation. And again, you may have noticed this in your own work, that engineers have this habit of coming out and feature dumping on people, and it's a bit of one-way traffic. They're just doing things to people or at people rather than with people. And so I encourage participation, and we might brainstorm all the different modes and means of participation that one might use in a presentation to involve people, because involving people and having them participate in your presentation is a much better experience for you and them, and more learning will take place than if it's this like one-way monologue. So I bet you want to know what the last couple are, don't you?
Number six and seven.
Okay, number six is performance. So that's the actual getting up on stage, or getting out in front of a group of people and delivering it. And that's where we might talk about your posture, your pronunciation, using pauses, the pitch of your voice. There's another few P's in there. And you'll notice, by the way, that those first five protocols all happen before you get in front of an audience. And one of the things that I personally feel is that when we hear people talking about the fear of public speaking, that often if we scratch below the surface, it's not really a fear of public speaking. It's a fear of being ill-prepared when you get out in front of a group of people, of, you know, not knowing your subject matter or not having some kind of structure for your talk or not knowing exactly what you're going to say. So there's those first five protocols, all five of them happen before you get on stage to make sure you are fully prepared and are matched in with your audience about what needs to be delivered. So then the sixth protocol is performance, as I was saying. In that one, we might talk about nerves that people have and what to do about those. We might talk about other performance related issues. And then the last one, Neil, is post-event. It's what happens after the presentation, because I describe a situation that I like to call drive-by presentations, where there's not much consultation before them. Somebody comes in, dumps a presentation, and they're off down the road before you know it. There's no proper follow-up. And of course, as salespeople say, the fortune is in the follow-up. You've got to do some following up. If it's a conference presentation, maybe you're going to be talking to the organisers to find out how your talk went down and what would be a better talk or an improved subject or a better approach next time around. If it is a sales situation, you want to follow up and see if the customer's ready to make a decision. But in all cases, there should have been a reason for doing the presentation in the first place. Maybe it's an internal one where you're introducing a new work process in an organization. And you need to follow up to find out whether the objectives of that presentation have been achieved. Not just the objectives of that small 40-minute presentation, but the wider objectives of introducing the new product or getting people to adopt a new work process or whatever it might have been. Okay. So those are the full seven.
Nice. So purpose, plan, preferences, practice, participation, performance, post-event, seven principles. David Duffy.
You're exactly right. Yeah.
I like it, man. This is cool. How long did it take you to come up with all these principles?
It's taken a few years to optimize them. They've been whirring around in my head for some time, and I'd got seven of them. And I don't know whether you remember a motivational speaker called Zig Ziglar. You might be too young. But he certainly was very famous in America at a certain time. Well, the Ziglar Corporation is still going. And one of the people that runs it is Tom Ziglar, his son, who I'm very privileged to know. And I was out having dinner with Tom, and I said, I've got these seven things in my head about presentations. Ideally, I want something, you know, like Stephen Covey's seven habits or seven pillars or whatever, but I need it to be a geeky word. So seven somethings about presenting. And he looked at me for about 20 seconds and then he came out with the word protocols. And I thought, what an excellent word. It's a bit of a geeky word. And it does very well describe those things. So they are the seven power presenting protocols for technical people to make presentations. They will help geeks speak. They'll help nerds be heard. They'll even help propeller heads propel ahead with their speaking opportunities.
That was great. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Protocol would be a more geekier word. I can remember working as an engineer having to draft test protocols and also the test reports. So absolutely, protocols would be an applicable word that I'm sure a lot of geeks can latch on to. So when it comes to even the work that you do, you can be in an audience and you're listening to a technical speech and you're listening to a non-technical speech. Are you looking for the same types of things or are you looking for different things based on the type of speech it is?
Yeah, I am. You're right. The thing is, when it's geek to geek or G to G, as I sometimes call it. So if it's, I used to run a very hardcore technical conference called AstroCon, which was for the Asterisk open source community. And so there'd be some very geeky software engineers presenting to a load of other geeky software engineering types. And so in that situation, I don't think we need to worry so much about some of the things that I would be thinking about, because there's a level of rapport that exists between geeks. There's mutual respect, because if this audience knows that you're the software engineer that created that bit of the product, then, you know, they're already warm to you. On the other hand, when you don't know the audience so well, or you're out of your normal audience and in a less familiar territory, then I do believe that you need to spend a great amount of time establishing rapport with your audience. And in fact, the way I think about this, Neil, for technical people, is you've probably tried to watch a YouTube video or a Vimeo video or whatever and seen that little circle going around where it says buffering because the connection's not very good. Have you ever had that experience?
Indeed.
Well, this happens when engineers talk to non-technical audiences all the time, because they haven't really established that bandwidth with the audience, which is that rapport through which they're going to not only communicate their message, but also it's the way that they're going to read the audience to find out whether the audience like it, understand it, are challenged by it, want to ask some questions. If the engineer hasn't opened up that rapport channel, then they're not going to see some of those things. And likewise, the audience is not going to get the meat of their message so well. And I have a real life example of that. Many years ago, I was the training manager in a telecommunications company where we were introducing the same kind of radio network to the UK as the iDEN network in the US. It was known as Tetra. And we had a trainer come in, a very highly technical trainer, to teach some of our engineers some of the technology. And it was a 3-day class. And it was only on the last afternoon of the 3 days that the audience felt as if they knew the trainer enough to have any proper interaction, ask some questions. And that was really down to the way that the trainer had not worked on his rapport. You know, it'd been a bit awkward. And it was only after the process of time that things had got to where the audience felt they could ask questions. Whereas a good presenter, even if they're a real life engineer, would actually spend a little bit of time opening up that rapport channel, making communications easier, making things more conversational so people feel they can be properly involved. And actually, Neil, just coming back to those seven protocols, imagine if you saw them all on one on top of each other. If you slide them around, you can actually get the word rapport coming down the middle of them, so that you remember that rapport is important. And actually, it's woven into each of those seven power presenting protocols.
Wow. You definitely put a lot of thought into your protocols. This is really cool, David. I really enjoyed learning about you and what you've done to really help the technical types getting better at their presentations. I think you're absolutely right about building rapport. I mean, it's so difficult to give a presentation with a whole lot of technical data to a non-technical audience if you don't do that, because oftentimes what will happen is they'll stop listening And you may very well get questions afterwards that you thought you'd answer during the presentation. I know I've been in that position. I used to have to give presentations in front of management, and those first few presentations were terrible. I knew they were terrible because at the end I would get these questions that I thought, well, man, I talked about that like 10 minutes ago. And you just asked me a question about that now? And you would have thought I would have gotten the hint that maybe I need to do a better job at putting these presentations together. But maybe I was like on the spectrum, like you had said earlier, of the people who weren't really interested in getting feedback. I'm an engineer. I know what's going on. You just listen to what I got to say, and that's it. But ultimately, my project got canceled. So that definitely was the wake-up call that I needed to know that this is probably something I need to get better at. But if that never happened, who knows where I'd be? I'd probably still be getting up there just using a whole lot of jargon and trying to get out of there as quickly as possible, like so many of us engineers.
Yeah, and you did. You took the learning, and you part of your journey. And it's great to be where you are right now helping other geeks. But one of the things I think is that if you can talk to your audience ahead of time during that purpose protocol, then you will have established contact with them. If you can't talk to the audience, maybe you can talk to a representative. Or if not, if it's the first time you've ever met the audience when you come out in front of them, then at least you should have an agenda slide that says, this is what I plan to talk about. How does that sound? And that gives them the opportunity to say, actually, that third point's probably a bit too technical for us, or, you know, we like it, carry on. And also, if you engage in conversation, then you can pretty quickly read where people are from a technical level. And you might then, if you're adept at using PowerPoint or Keynote or Prezi or whatever, you might kind of jump over things when you realize that, because as I'm sure you find in your work with technical people, Neil, but it actually kills a presentation to give too much technical information because people get a bit overloaded. You're much better off keeping it at a lighter level and letting those who do have deep technical questions ask them afterwards than you are to shoehorn information that the majority of people don't really need into a presentation.
100%. And, you know, when I started giving presentations, I didn't understand the importance of storytelling, but it's definitely something that I've gotten more accustomed to and I guess comfortable with moving forward. At least when I first started, I didn't even think that storytelling was all that useful, or not even just useful, but just appropriate for any sort of presentation that I'd have to give. But especially if you're talking to a non-technical audience, it can make the difference between them actually listening and not listening. And so I definitely move forward with storytelling, and I highly suggest other people try to implement it into their presentations as well, because stories tend to be more memorable than just a bunch of hard data.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so many advantages to storytelling. Like you say, they make, you know, they can make stuff that would have been kind of dry data very interesting. And they're also very involving to the audience. But there's a third dimension to storytelling as well. And that is, if you're in any kind of sales situations, and often presentations are sales in one way, it might not be a direct buy this, but it might be a use this process or adopt this work method or whatever. So there's a degree of sales. And whenever there's a sales situation, subconsciously, psychologically, the audience are going to treat whatever the person at the front says with a degree of suspicion. You know, it's a little bit like when you're watching the ShamWow guy and he's telling you all these things, you're thinking, yeah, right, you know, I'm not so sure about that. But when you tell a story, the audience draws their own conclusions from that story. So they're telling themselves. And that's much, much more powerful than you telling them. And so, you know, storytelling works on so many levels. And, you know, it's a win all round.
Yeah. When you were talking, David, it reminded me of when I used to go to conferences when I was an engineer. You know, oftentimes when people talk about public speaking and presentations, they say that the audience wants you to do well. Well, that's the case in many cases, but in some cases, that's not necessarily the case. I've been in presentations at conferences where you could have someone giving a presentation, and you could have somebody from a competing lab or a competing company in the audience, and they're just killing them with questions. It's like, that person did not want you to do well. They're trying to poke holes in everything you said during your presentation to make themselves and their lab or their company look better. And you can sometimes see the combativeness between the presenter and the person in the audience. So I'm it just made me, just when you were talking, it just made me remember that. It's just, yeah, for the most part, most people do certainly want you to do well, but every now and then you'll come across instances where maybe that's not the case. But you know what, David, this has been a great conversation. Thank you so much for being a guest. How can people get in touch with you?
They can find me at letthegeekspeak.com. And actually, we're transitioning before too long. We're going to be at geekspeakhq.com, although both will still work. So letthegeekspeak.com or geekspeakhq.com. You can also find me on LinkedIn. Just look for my name, David Duffett, D-U-F-F-E-T-T. There's not that many Duffetts out there, so relatively easy to find. Now, I just wanted to mention one thing that drives me, Neil, and that is you've probably heard of FOMO, the fear of missing out. Mm-hmm. Well, what drives me is FOGMO. It's the fear of geeks missing out. And so, you know, I can't stand the thought of geeks missing out on maybe new jobs or making the sale or raising funds for their company, getting their open source project off the ground, whatever it is, simply because they're not communicating as well as they could, or maybe even that they should. So that, you know, that's what drives me to do this. That's why I want to help geeks to speak, is so that, you know, they make the most of what they've got from their technical skills and abilities.
Wonderful. Well, everyone, that marks the end of another edition of Teach the Geek Interviews. My name is Neil Thompson. I'm the founder of Teach the Geek. I work with technical professionals so they can present more effectively, especially in front of non-technical audiences. And you can learn more about that at teachthegeek.com. Again, that's teachthegeek.com. Until next time, take care and stay safe. Thanks, David.
All the best. Bye-bye now.
Well, everyone, that marks another episode in the can. I hope you enjoyed it. If you like these episodes and want to support Teach the Geek, please subscribe, share, and like on any of your favorite podcast platforms, or on all of them. Also, if you prefer to watch the episodes, head on over to the YouTube channel at youtube.teachthegeek.com. Until next time.